this over here.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Literary Viewpoints, and this is Fran Lewis. It's 10 degrees outside. The sun is shining, and that's okay. It's going to be a beautiful day anyway. So we're here with somebody very special, and I'm going to talk with him in just a minute. I want to give a little intro. You can feel the electricity in the air that is generated from the crowd. The stands are so quiet you can hear a pin drop, but then a full explosion occurs. The visiting team takes the limelight and the announcer introduces the players. A home team comes through the doors and the room explodes even more. That's my favorite part. The players are in place, the blockers are chosen, the jammers get ready to score. I remember this like I could see it. And the rink is filled with the stars of my favorite sport ever in the whole world, roller derby. And roller derby was the catalyst that lit up the souls of so many, says author Tim Patton. Good morning, Tim, and I'm so glad that you're here.
Good morning, good morning. Listen, I've got a cold. I'm coming from San Francisco. I hope you can understand me, and we'll struggle through it.
No, I can hear you. Well, you wrote
good.
Three books that I've read.
Yes,
and
now, listen,
two of them.
Fran, do you know anybody else who was dropped on their head by their family when they were a child and they grew up and wrote three roller derby novels?
No, you're it.
I'm the only one. Yay, I'm the roller derby novel queen.
You are the only one. And you know what? It was funny when you sent me the email from my Razzle Dazzle. I got so excited that I called my cousin Susan, because we used to be the only two in the family except for my uncle that loved roller derby. And they had armory. I love roller derby. Oh, my God.
We watched it every weekend.
Yeah, we sat in the bleachers, actually. My father knew somebody. We could have gotten front row seats. But that was no fun, because if you sat up on top in the balcony, you got to meet the players.
Yes, yes, yes. Well,
that was my most
part.
Yeah, it was fun. And I mean, I have pictures of you, all of them. The San Francisco Bay Area Bombers were the biggest foe of the New York Chiefs. So
oh,
when
yeah.
they came
oh,
in,
yeah.
I would tell my father, my uncle, we got to see this. I got to see Jerry Murray and Tuffy Bazoom play. And
oh, yeah.
Tuffy was, oh, my God.
Yes.
Oh, she was, oh, my
great?
God. Yeah, you had a...
She
was
she
better
was
than
tiny.
Great.
She
yeah,
was
she
a tiny
was scary, though.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. She was scary. So tell us about my Razzle Dazzle and Roller Babes. That was the start of your career writing.
Let me try to explain roller derby real quick. It was invented by Leo Seltzer in the 1935 era. Out of a dance marathon came a roller marathon, and that became roller derby, and then his son took it over, and then other people in the Bay Area took it over, all the way until the year 2000. And now there's a modern roller derby, which is mostly on flat track and is legitimate. Now, the roller derby I skated in was for the fans. It was entertainment. And you had to learn to take falls and hits and go over the rail and injure yourself. So the roller derby that some people might remember from the past is much different than the roller derby that is active today, and it's very active today. Now, let me explain. I wanted to write a book because the thing that everybody's fascinated with is the women in the roller derby. How can women be so brutal and violent and unfeminine? And roller derby was one of the first team sports. It was the first team sport that allowed women to compete on the same rules as men. So it was the very first feminist equality accomplishment. And, you know, the world was excited about this thing, and they loved watching it because they could watch the women and then the men all in one night. So I wrote Roller Babes. Mm-hmm. I wanted to let everybody know just what a bunch of tough bitches these women were.
Oh, they were?
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, they were, they were young. They had to go out on the road. They lived on the road. They lived in group hotels, and they ate in group eating things, and they skated all the time. Sometimes they would skate 8 games a week. It was hard work, very hard work. And I think a lot of all the skaters suffered a lot of, being, let's just say, 17 or 18 or 20. They suffered a lot of homesick. But they fell in love on the road, and they were jealous on the road, and they got in fights on the road, and they fell out of love on the road. So I wanted to talk about Roller Babes because it was a moment in history like no other.
Yeah, it was. I mean, like, they had it on television a while ago, but it wasn't the same. It wasn't the same like during the 70s when roller derby was fantastic, and you sat up there. So the question that people have asked many times, I mean, if you play the San Francisco Bear or Bombers or the Red Devils against the New York Chiefs, and somebody's the home team, does the home team always win? Or does the other team have to win?
Not always. Not always. It was not, sometimes it was planned, sometimes it wasn't, sometimes it was a mistake. If you try to plan something and you got all these other people skating with you, you mess up a lot because everybody's on wheels.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's really hard to say it's choreographed, maybe loosely
That's
choreographed. With you. But, then I decided after Roller Babes, I would tell my story as a gay man, getting excited about watching roller derby as a very young kid, roller skating all my life, and then traveling to California to join the roller derby. Let's go join the circus, everybody. And my God. And I walked into the training center, and I felt immediately at home because here was a whole bunch of people who had the same calling that I had. We're all different, but I knew this was a family. So that changed my life.
I could feel it when you read it and how everybody got together and everybody sort of protected everyone. It was real. I mean, it was amazing.
Yes, yes. Yeah, when we skated together, roller derby was kind of funny because we all have real lives. We're different people in our real lives. We have real jobs. And you come together and do this thing in roller derby for TV shoots. And it's just an incredible bond that is generated that I've just never experienced before.
Yeah, that is amazing. I know, and the way you each person. I mean, so tell us about these two characters, Joni Weston. I must have seen her play. And Eve is somebody that you created in the story, Eve Belzac,
yes.
Or she you created her. But Joni Weston, I know, is real. So how did two tough characters, two tough roller derby stars, play off of each other? I can imagine Joni didn't like Eve, Eve didn't like her, and nobody liked Dorothy Baker. Nobody liked any of them.
Well, I got to tell you, I have to use pen names for some of the skaters. If I don't have consent. So, I'll tell you something. These people, these top women of that era, now we're talking about the 60s, 70s, and 80s or something, And they didn't hate each other, but they held their grudges. They're all dead now, to their grave. So they did have life grudges. And I've never seen that about female nature. And I was very shocked by the competitiveness of these people that they held grudges for so long. Like, oh my God, she tried to date my boyfriend or whatever. You know, just silly little things sometimes. Or she stole that point from me and I didn't want her to. They remember these forever. You know, it's very interesting. So I became friends with Joan. Joan was a business person, and I have some business acumen about me, I don't know, a little bit. And we just saw eye to eye, but she was so nice. She never swore. She never drank. She never said anything bad about another skater to another person, because if she did, the rumor mill would pick that up, and she would just be ripped to shreds.
Wow.
The rumors in roller derby are terrible. It's like Hollywood. You don't dare. She was a star. You don't dare start a whole bunch of stuff, and then somebody's going to try and hurt you legitimately on the track, which some people do that. They purposely try to hurt people for various reasons. So, and I knew Eve Belzac too, but she was a different character. Oh my God. So, I love bringing those characters into my stories because they represent the feud of all feuds, the grudges of all grudges, just skating every game, going at each other all the time, getting knocked down, getting in fights, pulling their jerseys off their heads, and all kinds of crazy stuff they would do. Joan took her skates off once. She was so mad. She didn't want her skates to jiggle when she tried to hit Eve, you know, because when you're on your skates, it's hard to fight and wrestle. So I'd have to say, as a gay man, this is what we love. We love when Joan Collins goes after Betty Davis, you know, or whatever. This is just the best entertainment in the world for gay people, gay men, I'm going to say. I don't know about the lesbians, but...
I loved it. I was so sorry I can't roller skate. My mom gave me one roller skate with a key at the bottom and said, you know, you don't want to fall and hurt yourself. But I used to get, like, you know, heart stopping. I would watch the jams and say, okay, someone's going to get whipped across, but are they going to block them? And I was like, okay, Jerry Murray, okay, Gene Gammon, get ahead.
Yes, and would you move in your seat and kind of nudge the person next to you like you're blocking, you know? Yeah, the audience really puts themselves in the skater's feet, and this is what I skates. What I liked about the entertainment version of roller derby is it took the audience for a ride. And, you know, when, for me, I would have fans that would wait for you and want to shake your hand or sign an autograph. And they're always between the ages of 7 to 12, girls and boys. And so I had to be closeted. I was not a gay skater. I was just a skater, you know, because we had family audiences all those years. So we had to be professional.
Well, how come you wrote this Mike Hill play? There are a lot of social issues, and I read it, and I knew what I was going to read. And I know you did a lot of research about AIDS and had different cures, but some of the things that you did, well, I don't know whether to laugh or cry, that as to how you were going to get yourself better. And I'm saying, like, he didn't really do that. And I go, like, he really did that. Did you really do that? Yes, you really did that. I was like, how did you come up with some of these things? And when you found out you had AIDS, that must have been tough because other players had it also.
Well, I've been wanting to write about my HIV experience for a long time, but it's so damn painful.
I can imagine.
60 friends. I don't have any friends alive today now. They all died from it. I'm the survivor. And now I live with a bunch of people who are much younger, and none of them have the HIV. So my life has just gone into a different place. But, God, it was painful. So I had to figure out. Now, have you ever heard of male circumcisions?
No.
I wanted to mix that into because when I was 5 years old, I remembered being circumcised 5 years
ago. Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember that scene.
And
I was cringing as I read it.
Yeah, and it was kind of my first medical trauma, and I thought, well, let's tie my HIV experience in with my very first medical trauma, 5 year old getting his circumcision. Anyway, so I the beginning was pretty easy to write, but there was a part where I had to take almost 6 months to try to understand how can I write this without making everybody depressed. Did you get depressed?
No, I did not. I started to laugh, and I go like, "He's got." I didn't. Some of the things that you did, I go like, I cracked up laughing, and go, "That was really wild." No, I didn't get depressed. I was just like, I had to give you props and courage for some of the things that you did. I go like, "Oh my God, he didn't really stick that where that one. He didn't really put that on him." It was hilarious.
Yes.
I was like. It was sad, but it was funny. Oh, my God.
Well, it's a crazy act of desperation. You know, every rumor, we didn't have any medicine to take. I was HIV positive for almost 20 years before the medicine finally came out. And every rumor that you heard or, you know, I did anyway, followed up on it. Stick this here, put that there, eat this, pee on this, and lick it, anything.
I know. That was like, oh, my God. I have enough trouble when they have to do a urine analysis and trying not to miss the cup. I said, like, oh, my God. So
I look back fondly at those times now, and I knew that I could maybe write them to see that this is not a terrible time. It was, it would be like anybody else who came down with the disease today, that there was no cure yet, there was no medicine. You would do anything. We'll do crazy shit to stay alive. That's for sure.
Yeah, I know. You're amazing. I mean, because my brother had a best friend that died of AIDS a long time ago, and we didn't know. We didn't know that he did, and it was like out of the blue, and I guess his parents didn't want to admit that he had it, so I don't know if he ever went to get any treatment. So when and how did you decide to write, do commercials? That must have been fun to do those commercials for roller derby.
Well,
of like stage things.
Yeah. Back in those days, if you needed stunt skaters that could fall or, you know, do some stunts, you called up the roller derby. I think nowadays there's a lot of stunt skaters, so you don't need to call the roller derby. But they called, then the roller derby owner called us, and, you know, we go in for a screen test, and then we go in. If you're selected, you go in and do the shoot. So I did a couple of them. One for airlines and five for Toyota. Toyota commercials. They gave me a girl. Yes, they gave me a girl, and they let me skate with the girl. And she'd fall down, and I would pick her up and grab her hair, pretend I was in love.
That must have been some pretty good acting, Tim, right?
Yeah, that was good acting. Yeah, then we'd go sit on the car, and the camera would pan to the Toyota. Well, you know, the commercial work is actually very hard. You have to get up very early, 4 o'clock in the morning, get to the shoot by 5, and they work you all day long, scene after scene after scene after scene. But I enjoyed that very much.
So tell us, I don't want to name all the people, whichever ones you want. Which people in this particular book had the greatest impact on you? I think I have everybody's name listed on the bottom of my page. There was Jamie, there was Todd, there was Patrick, there was Zach, all of them. And then, of course, there was David. So which people that you know that you met through roller derby would you say had the greatest impact on you out of all of them?
I'd say Zach. I just really, he was from Puerto Rico, and he was just such a attractive Puerto Rican man, you know. And
you described him. I said, oh, my God, to me, he's not standing in front of me. Ah.
Yes, I know. He was so handsome and so nicely built and just charming and funny and, you know, just a good guy. He was a good guy, good Christian guy and all that stuff, Catholic, I think they are. And I just thought he was the neatest guy to skate with. I skated against him a lot of times, and then we skated together quite a few times. I just enjoyed the camaraderie with him. So as a skater friend, I put him at the top of the list. But there was, but you know, when you skate with all these guys, every weekend you're with a whole bunch of guys. I liked all of them. I liked all of them. I liked the captains that would want to, work with you and, whatever. And I just liked all of them.
That is good. That is great. So when you learned that you had this virus, at first you didn't tell anybody. Nobody really knew, did they?
No.
And you had to hide the sores and the purple and all the rest of it, right? So that must have been hard.
I went into the closet again, deeper. Mm-hmm. I was afraid to cough in public. I was afraid to just look ill in any kind of way, like a scar from shaving would make people think, well, what's that sore on your chin? You know, what's going on? If you look gay and you have a sore on your chin, there's the stigma that you've got it and you're going to die. You know, back then, people died within 6 to 9 months.
Wow. And you've had it for 35 years?
35 years now. Yay!
Yeah, I see. I remember that. And I saw you. And I saw you wrote on Facebook the other day that you're cancer-free, and I went double yay.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, what did you say?
I heard on Facebook the other day you had your cute picture on there with a whole bunch of guys that saying you were cancer-free, and I said that is great.
Yep. Yes. Yeah, I've decided to begin since this book. You know, I write other books, and I have a lot of straight readers, straight male readers. But I decided, Tim, you just had, and then they friend me on Facebook. Just tell your story. I'm not embarrassed of it, although I was so frightened of it for decades. It seemed like
I would imagine.
Well,
I would imagine.
The worst is with waking up every day and knowing there's no cure. That went on for 18 years. That was just after a while. You're just like, just kill me and get it over with. I'm tired of waking up knowing there's nothing I can do.
Well, you know what? You're lucky that you've somehow one of these crazy cures or whatever you're doing is working. So that's really all that matters. And then when you texted me, emailed me the other day, I said, oh, my God, he's got to get better. It can't be anything terrible.
No, I'm going to die before I get my interview up. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I know.
I said, he's got to get better. He's got to get better to come on the air so people could read. Oh, we've got a whole bunch of listeners, people. We've got Cheryl from Partners in Crime. If you ever write a murder, seriously, or a murder mystery, Partners in Crime is the only one that you want to do your blog towards. They did mine. And we have Marcia Cook that's on the phone, and she's a children's writer and a romance writer, and she loves all kinds of romance, trust me. So tell us about the Derby, and how many times, this is my two favorite teams, was the New York Chief, they were called something else, the New York Express, and the Bombers. How many times did you play against these teams?
Oh.
Especially the Bombers. That was, you had a stake in that one, right?
No, I would say hundreds. It was in the hundreds of times that I skated on the different teams in different parts of the world, New York, Denver, San Francisco, L.A., Sacramento. I think the New York experience was my most exciting time because New Yorkers hadn't seen roller derby in a long time, and by the time we got to Madison Square Garden, we visited three or four arenas and then Madison Square Garden. And I had never skated in front of 12, 13,000 people before.
Oh, wow.
It was incredible. And the Garden, I got to tell you, the locker rooms at the Garden are incredible. They treat the athletes like real athletes.
Well, that's amazing. So tell me, were you ever a jammer when you played or a blocker?
Oh, yeah.
Which position did you play?
Jammer and blocker.
Jammer's the fun. You get to score points.
Yeah, exactly. I like both of them, but I honestly never was a big star. I was just a skater. And jammers have to have a lot of razzle-dazzle, and I'm kind of a tall person, and the smaller jammers are the ones that have the fast footsteps and stuff like that, you know, footwork. But I jammed quite a bit at Madison Square Garden. Got knocked over the rail. Got kicked on my ass. Got thrown in the infield.
And I was probably right there watching you somehow. Somehow,
you were going, get him.
Yeah. But I used to get upset because the one team would be ahead by 1 point or 2 points, and all of a sudden the jammer on the team I wanted to win was there, and then upset, out of nowhere the other one would come. Go like, excuse me, you're in his way or her way. And I think the women were tougher than the men on the ring too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I remember.
Well, there's a lot of lesbians on that New York team.
Yeah, I know.
Watch out for them.
I know. Some of them were married and didn't care either, seriously. So what happened when you finally, what I really sort of got tears in my eyes when I read the book was when you told your mother. And her reaction, I said, oh, my God, what a wonderful lady, that she understood and told you to come home, but you didn't want to.
Yeah, these scenes all really happened. And that was a hard conversation, though, to call your mom in the early 80s somewhere and tell her that you had what Rock Hudson had. And and she loved Rock Hudson, but never once guessed that he might be gay.
He was
a handsome, handsome leading man in Hollywood. So that was really hard. And, you know, the problem I always had was trying to explain how I can't just come home. That, she would have to, people would find out in a small town, and then she would be ostracized. There'd be people would throw eggs at the house or tell you to get out of town because we don't want to catch that thing. You know, it just would have been hell. But living in San Francisco, or if you lived in New York, it was much easier. Much easier, because there was a lot of people going through it. And I happen to live near, in an area that has other gay people, you know, in my neighborhoods here. So there are others like me.
Well, that makes it not easier, but that makes it better, and, you know, for you to be with people that are more acceptable. But I know that I had students that were HIV positive when I was teaching. And I know that when I got their profiles, or somebody got their profiles and didn't tell them, they never told you that they had HIV positive. They just said they were medically fragile. And one of the boys took a reading test, and he started to bleed while he was taking the test. And they called me to come and get him, and I had to call the nurse to come and get him. And then somebody whispered in my ear, make sure you wear gloves, and then I figured it out. But I wasn't going to deny him the right of taking. I had no idea. And he told me, the boy told me himself, he says, Mrs. Lewis, I have HIV positive. You want to make sure that you're protected. And then they made us all get tested, but I wasn't even worried at that point. It was sad because, you know, people, the kids that knew him, you know, ostracized him. My friend that was his teacher and myself,
Used to go in hospitals in the early days. People would dress in space suits, and they would leave food trays at the door because they didn't want to go in. And, it was a crazy time. It's a crazy time. Well, I thought it might happen again when Ebola came around, but not so.
Yeah. Well, this is the fun part of this book. Each one of you guys, let's talk about happy things. Each one of you guys created your own persona, your own special person. And the dance scenes were hilarious, you got to admit. Everybody refers to different names of women and different people. How did you come up with that? That was so funny. It was like, I want you to come into the bar and dance too. I can't, I'm a klutz, but what can I do?
What? Now, when we were where? At the dance? What? Say that again. I'm sorry.
When you were at the bar dancing with the guys and they went crazy.
Oh, yeah.
You would come up with these things. Oh, my God. That was hilarious. I know. I mean, I laughed a lot reading this.
Oh, you made my
upset.
Day. You made my day. I wanted you to find that funny.
It was great. People have to read that to appreciate it. Because I could picture you guys doing this. I go like, oh, my God. And then Jamie, I loved him. He was one of my favorite people in the book.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the sad part of this was we needed to escape because we knew we were all possibly dying. And we would go out and dance all night long and just float on the rhythms. And it was just so much fun just getting away. And, you know, when you're a roller derby skater, you have a lot of the physical energy that you can need to work off. If you're not skating that weekend, you'll dance all night. Those are very romantic times, too.
Yeah, I know. You had some big fun, I know. And you had some competition there for some of those guys that you liked. And I was going to punch them out of the way. See, I did read this book. You see, people. But that's what makes it so great, is because it's so real. It's a real life story. But the roller derby, like, every time you start a scene about the roller derby or a game, I was getting heart palpitations. And then at times I just sort of like went on YouTube to find what the scene so I could see if it really happened. So what happened when you met David and somebody trying to get him away from him? I'm glad you got him. See, I told you.
I got to tell you, David was a porn star, so he was very, very handsome and
I could imagine.
Big shoulders, big everything. So, but he was, I got to tell you, he was very, very monogamous. That's something.
You're lucky. You're lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, because I think I cheated on him a couple of times. God,
I know, I've heard that book. Oh, boy, Tim was a real, see, you got to watch out, guys. What can I tell you?
Well, you know, somebody just sent me a roller derby photo of me way back in 1979, maybe, or 80. And,
oh, nice.
I was against all the men on my team, and I was standing there, and I thought, I never thought I was very attractive, honest. I'm just
well,
not.
Well, guys, you got to look at the back cover of the book, because he's really cute, let me tell you. And I've got him right in front of me, and he's really cute. Watch out. You're going to get a whole lot of people asking you for a date. You never know. He's really cute, guys, really seriously.
Well, the funny thing was, when I looked at my photo, I said, God, I'm the one with the wide shoulders and the tight tall, dark, and, you know, built. And I just thought I was a skinny mini. So I kind of shocked myself about seeing that. You know, I was always insecure about my body, I think. I think all of us have an insecurity. But I have to tell you, athletics makes you feel wonderful almost immediately after you work out. You know, just 5 minutes later, you're going to start feeling better about yourself, better well-being, just not dragging your ass around wishing you were different, just enjoying who you are.
Yeah, I can understand that in a different way. I was always overweight. Everybody else would say, you know, you can't dance, you can't do this or anything, but I was smart. So each one of us has to find what we're good at. And it doesn't
That's
matter,
right.
You know, what you look like. And I was not very pretty when I was growing up. And, you know, they would say to me, you know, you have a big nose, you have a big butt, whatever. And I'd go like, yeah, but I'm very smart. And I could lose weight, and you can't lose your nastiness. And you're going to have to, you know, later for you. I didn't care after a while. It didn't matter. So
I never wanted to pass through life on my appearance. I wanted to pass through life on my character, my abilities, my skills, whatever they were. I didn't care what I looked like. I don't even look at myself in the mirror these days. I'm a scared too.
No, don't be scared too. So, if anybody wanted to do roller derby now, somebody that doesn't have two left feet or five left toes and could actually skate, would you advise that they go into this? Because it's a strenuous procedure just to practice and be on any kind of team. It doesn't happen overnight.
No, it takes a long time, but just going to the roller rink or roller skating outside is good. You know, I think it's some people have more of a knack for it than others, of course, and some people are even super skilled at it. But if it's the activity you like, it's kind of a group activity if you go to a roller rink. So you can do a little socializing, too. I remember I took some of my friends roller skating way back when, and I was a roller derby skater. And this one person, I tried to block him in the roller rink. He fell down and broke his wrists.
Oh, God.
Oh, I felt so bad. But this is the problem with being a roller derby skater. You want to get rough. You know,
yeah.
You're used to bumping shoulders, bumping hips, rocking them and socking them. And I couldn't control myself.
So
we've been
Chapter 14 was scary. So you kept me on edge when between the female skaters, and I got really upset when Joni Weston was down. So how did you choose which roller derby fights and games to highlight? And tell us about this special game and when your family was there. How did they react to seeing you skate? And Joni, your mother loved Joni Weston, I remember that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I tell you, I think my mother said it was the most important day of her life because she grew up watching Joni, and And then Joni spoke to her and talked about me. And I think that, you know, my mother was from Wisconsin. They didn't have enough money to go to Chicago to see a show, you know, like a live show or anything. So this was live entertainment for her and my family. Yeah, they loved it. My sister always wanted to skate also. You know, it's funny when you watch roller derby, we would, when we were kids, we would go running in the kitchen and slide around on our socks, pretending we were rolling. So it used to really motivate you because it was such an emotional high.
It was fun, and if you went into a roller rink, you know, sometimes the kids would want to race around the rink to see, you know, who could be the faster, and they would pretend to be, you know, some of the roller derby stars, but, you know, no one was allowed to kill anybody or punch anybody, you know.
That's
they
right,
couldn't
yeah.
do that part. So tell us about Todd and Alistair. Those are two other characters in the book. And what happens when Todd gets hurt and David tries to save him? That was a sad scene, but that was really good.
Now you're going to have to remind me about that scene again. Todd and who?
And Todd and Alistair. Tell us about those two.
Oh, God, yes. Well, Todd was at work in Oakland, California, and walked into his boss's office, the vice president, Alistair, and it was the day of the earthquake. It was 5:04, whatever it was. The Loma Prieta earthquake, and oh my God. You know, I don't know if very many people have been in earthquakes. I've been in two or three of them, but that was a big one. It just seemed like the room was folding like a cardboard box, and glasses were breaking, and of course electricity went off, and Alistair got under his desk finally.
Oh, God.
And I kind of fell onto a chair, and we just waited, and well, that was shocking. And you know, then there's all the post shocks, and so we left and saw, we looked out the window and saw almost every window broken. We saw things that had fallen down from the tops of buildings and crashed on cars and, you know, on the corners, all the ornaments and stuff like that that are on the fancy buildings. That was hell. That was scary. Then
I tried to drive
home, and the Cypress Freeway had collapsed on top of itself, and God, it was the bridge fell on top of itself, and they couldn't get any cars across of it. Then I don't know if I even wrote about this. This was the crazy part. In Oakland, the bridge, the Oakland Bay Bridge, is real close to the sewage plant, human waste. Well, the water veins that, you know, that bring the waste into the sewage plant had broken open, and sewage was seeping up all underneath the car, like 2 inches of sewage. So that by the time I got home, I thought, right there, I thought, oh my God, this is, I'm going to gag, I'm going to throw up. It's really interesting how fragile our tiny little world is when Mother Nature says, whoa, you know, fuck you, and you're fucked. So.
Oh, my God.
Yeah,
that was, before I forget, people, I don't want to forget, Monday at 10, be there. The case of the missing suitcase, Carl Brookins, his character is hilarious. On the 30th, we've got Jeffrey Wells, A Tone for the Ivory Cloud, another one from Partners in Crime, great murder mystery, really good author. On the 3rd, I'm doing a special on 11 o'clock, Belaganza Belladonna with Terry Winetsky, talking about a school in Navajo School. And on the 5th, we've got Jill Rosenberg, Jill, Amy Rosenberg, the fixer, the killing kind. You don't want to be around that main character when they kill. And on the 6th, we've got one of my favorite people, Charles Salzberg, Wayne's Way Out, Swan's Way Out. And that is just for the rest of April. And, of course, we've got April 18th, Silent Source. And a big one on the 24th. Lost Order. Steve Berry will be here taking the Sunday spotlight. So I'm excited about that. And of course, on May 9th, the head writer of Murder, She Wrote, Tom Sawyer, will be here to talk about his memoir and his 9 badass ways to get you to get yourself published. So what happens when, tell us about David and how you realized that he was the right one and that it was inevitable that this was going to happen, that you two were going to be together before we end. We have about 10 minutes.
Well, you know, I immediately when I met David, it was the classic story. I don't know how this works with people, mm-hmm. but there's chemistry of some sort that is mm-hmm. there and that attracts you. It's beyond the physical. But then as time went on, I thought, wow, why is this guy interested in me, for God's sakes? I mean, he was like the porn goddess. He'd done quite a bit of porn, in fact, over the years, and had a lot of friends who did porn. But, of course, that was the old days. But after the earthquake, I had finally made my way across the bridges and San Mateo and all these places to get home. All the lights were off in San Francisco. There was still aftershocks quaking all over. Fires were, you know, lit. The place was on fire. And when I got home, he happened to come by. He had be walking by with another friend, and I said hi, and that's when I kind of thought I should call him sometime and, you know, do the nasty thing that men do. Mm-hmm. And we did it, and then we did it again and again and again.
You sound, so, I know, and I can picture it in the book, and you guys are having too much fun. Really, though.
Oh, my God. It was. I mean, after the sex connection was a reality, I thought, where have you been?
You had too much fun. I'm sorry. This is not, you know, not fair to
I know.
But I'm glad you had that. He didn't enjoy himself. Well, but if you guys read this, you're going to get jealous, girl, guys. Seriously.
Well, the funny thing is, we were both HIV positive. We found out we were
That's
both
right,
HIV
right.
positive. So we thought, well, let's just do it. Who cares anymore? Because all before
it didn't
this.
It didn't matter.
I was afraid. Yeah, exactly. I was afraid to meet anybody or do anything because you didn't know if they had it or you didn't want to give that. It was just crazy.
Yeah, well, that's amazing. So when you realize that there are other people around you that had the same thing, and it became not easier to deal with, but at least you were able to talk about it, right, with other people.
Yes. Yeah. David and I both started going to workshops here. Yeah, I forget what they were called. You know, 6 people in a circle, holding hands, crying, and all that stuff, you know.
Mm.
So those things.
I'm looking at my phone here. That's good. Thank God it's not going. So tell everybody, how did you feel when so many of your friends died of this particular illness? I cried every time somebody died. It was hard. And then David at the end, that got me.
Well, I gotta say, it's most I have a lot of post trauma, whatever you call it, from mm-hmm. you know, everybody dying on you, and I wake up in the middle of the night moaning and, you know, jumping out of bed still. So it has a very deep, permanent impact. I think it would be no different than if you were maybe on a battleship with 60 other people, and they die from some, you know, bomb dropping on them or something. So it's very traumatic. I never forget them, but I want to. And every time somebody else dies today, it's just, I don't even know them, but you just recall all of that, all of those people who passed. Now, I have to be
I have a request for you. Cheryl from Partners in Crime is listening in, and she does email me, and I'm going to put you in an email with how she would like a copy of the book to read.
Oh, perfect. Find me on Facebook, email me, do whatever you want. Come and see me. I'm open again. I'm in living. I'm having fun and enjoying it. I just want
someone
to read.
She's a great person. And so I'm going to put you in an email with her after the show so that you can send Cheryl a book, because she's fantastic. And a lot of people that are asking us for copies of the book, you're going to get real popular again. See what can I tell you. So before we end, tell everybody the definition. I understand what the true meaning of the title is. Why did you pick My Kill Play? That was perfect.
Why did I call it Kill Play? Roller Derby has a play that we do on the track, and it's called a Kill Play. And it's a play where a skater goes out and ends up at the rear of the pack, defenseless, and the other team pummels them, and they just never can score a point. And we
call it
a Kill Play. Yeah, so I called the book My Kill Play.
That was so cool. And then what's really great about this book, everybody, is that Tim puts in at the end of the book, chapter one of his other book. And I thought that was great too. You have chapter one of Roller Babes, right? You have Roller Babes in there. And you got to meet Lottie Zimmerman. And she sort of has a hard love story too, from Ugly Riches to whatever. And we meet a whole bunch of people. Oh, wait a minute, we have something about Beyonce and you're getting away gay married. That's hilarious. So before we end, what are you writing next?
I'm writing something for men's groups today. It's just an article. I don't know what I'm going to do yet for a book. You know what I want to write again? Oh, God, I hate me for this. I want to write some scenes where women are just, this is evil. I don't know why I'm this way. Are undermining each other, sabotaging their relationships. Going through all of the hate wars of whatever, jealousy and all that. I don't know why that is so entertaining to me, but it must be to other people too.
Well, if you're writing an article about something, then you've got to send it to me so I can publish it in May and MJ10 on my magazine.
Sure.
With your links and your handsome picture and everything, that would be really cool. And Cheryl from Partners in Crime says, thank you. She's excited about reading the book. I said, I'm going to get you a whole bunch of fans today. So before we end, where can everybody learn more about you and your work? And guys, if you want to check out a hot guy, check him out on Facebook. Seriously.
Well, you know, I don't really have a big publicity splash anywhere. But on Amazon.com, I have an author bio page that has all my books that I've written at Amazon. I think all of them are there. I can't remember for sure. I think I have 5 books out. Before I die, I want to have one more.
You're not going anywhere.
One more Cheap Tango at the dance hall.
Oh, that sounds nice, but you're not going anywhere. No, you're going to be around for a very long time.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I'm gonna be around to have a learn because we need your spirit, we need your laughter, and we need your courage because what can I say?
You know,
a lot of us
have been through
not the same thing
as you,
but other things
this
past couple
of years.
And you know, every time I see something that you write, I tell myself, okay, I've got a few things that are not curable too, not like that. And I would say, you know what, if two could go through that, I could deal with that.
Fran, you discovered me.
I'm glad I did.
So
everybody,
thank you so much.
Thank you.
You.
Goodbye.
And you, bye. And have a great day. I love you the best. And when you write the article, send it to me.
Thank you. Goodbye from San Francisco.
Bye-bye.